Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines, 5 o'clock, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com. LeBron and Durant have drafted their team for the All-Star Game. LeBron's going to go with Giannis, Steph, Luka, Jokic, Dame off the bench. Durant goes with Kyrie, Embiid, Kawhi, Beal, Jason Tatum, Harden off the bench. Three-time All-Pro center Jason Kelce has announced that he has restructured his contract and instead of retiring, will return for another year in Philadelphia. Lions going to restructure their contract of linebacker Jamie Collins. Washington football team has released quarterback Alex Smith. That frees up $14.7 million in cap space. Bills have extended safety Micah Hyde 2 years, $19.5 million. A couple of former Huskies getting jobs. Chargers have signed kicker Tristan Vizcaino, and the Rams have tendered an offer to former dog guard Coleman Shelton. Villanova loses a huge piece. Guard Colin Gillespie lost for the season with a torn MCL. Gillespie was a 3-year starter, averaging 14 points and 5 assists per game for the 10th-ranked Wildcats. All right, this hour sponsored by West Coast Men's Health. Perform the way you used to. Call them right now. Here's the phone number, 206-312-7008. You can check out westcoastmenshealth.com. All right, it's What's Brewing time. I kind of like this segment we've been doing the last couple of weeks. West Coast Brewing, preview of what's going on this weekend. Let's do it.
Yeah, I bet you could use a cool one, huh?
Now you're talking.
This is What's Brewing, powered by Pelican Brewing, the folks that bring you Beat Breaker Double IPA.
Manny, look at this Pelican flag. Come on, Pelican.
On Seattle Sports Radio 950. KJR.
There's a very good chance I will be breaking open a Beat Breaker Double IPA. And let's see, time-wise, I have 2 hours plus 20-minute drive. And 2 hours and 25 minutes.
That's not too bad.
Yeah. About that. That sounds pretty good for a Friday night. All right, we will start in the NBA. Team LeBron, as I mentioned in the update, takes on Team Durant. That'll be at 5 o'clock in the All-Star Game on Sunday. But first, we're going to have the Skills Challenge and the three-point contest at 3:30. And as we mentioned earlier, the three-point contest is absolutely stacked. Steph Curry, Jaylen Brown, Devin Booker, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, former Bothell High star Zach LaVine, all participating in the three-point shootout. So some years it's the dunk contest that kind of takes precedence. This year it is definitely the three-point shootout that's going to take precedence because you actually have some superstars in that.
Who you got in that?
I mean, how do you go against Steph Curry in a three-point shooting contest?
Why did I know you were going to say that? Because I know the answer. The dude who just feels shaded by Team LeBron, Donovan Mitchell, who feels like he has to do literally everything this weekend.
Interesting.
Think about the last week for him after getting picked second to last and everything that he went through with the ejection. He's out to prove something this weekend, I think.
I would agree with that. I think he's going to do that more. I think he cares about doing that more in March, April, and May and June. Yeah. Versus this weekend. But Steph, he doesn't waste any energy shooting the basketball. So, like, he doesn't get tired. Some of these guys take these power J's, and by the time they've shot, like, 15, they're just dragging
just
in this
second
half.
It's easy to pick Steph.
I know. You want a dark horse? Jason Tatum, maybe? A dark horse?
Yeah, good season from Boston.
You know, maybe that, but I just can't go. I can't go away from Steph.
That's fair.
I think he's like 2-1, 2.5
that's
to one.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
All right. Well, let's go to college hoops, shall we? Tomorrow at 11 a.m., we're getting to get down to the nitty gritty. I'm so glad that Slickhawk texted me yesterday and said, hey, can you join the morning show this morning and be our judge? Did you hear about this?
No.
So I was recruited as their quote-unquote college basketball whatever.
Expert?
No, I'm not going to use that word to describe myself in any realm at all.
Well, you're going
to
talk a basketball expert, of course.
So they had me on to be their judge, and they drafted Kid, Slickhawk, Chuck, and Buck, each drafted in a snake draft, 4 teams prior to the brackets coming out.
I saw this, yeah.
So they're just their teams. And hey, if you get four teams all in the same bracket, sorry about it. Well, at least you get a great chance of getting one Final Four team, right? So I went through and last night I just crammed, man. It was awesome. I watched let's see, I had two games recorded. I watched West Virginia, Texas was spectacular.
Great game.
Probably the best game I've seen all year long. I watched Michigan, Illinois that I had recorded. I watched Oklahoma, Texas that I had recorded. So I was like, I was just in this, I was like, family, dad's working. I finally pulled the dad's working card because I'm usually pretty good with that at night. I'm like, no, unless it's a Seahawks or a Husky game or something like that, we'll get to Mariner season and I'll watch some, obviously watch some games, but I'm usually pretty good at putting the TV down. Let's play with the kids.
But these last few days have just
been. Last night I was like, oh, it's getting too good in college basketball. And at 11 a.m., that aforementioned West Virginia team hosts Cade Cunningham and 17th-ranked Oklahoma State. So two teams that were picked this morning, I believe. Remember who picked? I think it was Kid that picked West Virginia, I believe. And Oklahoma State was selected as well. Chuck took Oklahoma State. I kind of made fun of him for that because usually one-man teams don't exactly do very well in the NCAA tournament. That's going to be a good game, 11 a.m. tomorrow. Then at 1 o'clock, game of the weekend, number 7, Ohio State, still in this hunt for a one seed. But they're going to have to win in order to have any chance at a one seed. They play 4th-ranked Illinois, who is fresh off that drubbing that I watched of 2nd-ranked Michigan this week. And then Sunday at 9:30, staying in the Big Ten, 5th-ranked Iowa tries to stay in the number one seed conversation with a home game against 25th-ranked Wisconsin. And at 1 o'clock, number 3 Baylor, who did right the ship, looked like they were going to lose that game, but they got the win against West Virginia to win their first conference title in 71 years. They will host 18th-ranked Texas Tech. Last but not least, we go to my favorite sport to watch. Yes, even more than basketball. We go to the world of golf, where this week they're at Bay Hill. It's Arnie's tournament, the Arnold Palmer Invitational. And for those that don't know Bay Hill, probably most of you don't know Bay Hill, I will explain the 6th hole to you. There is a huge lake, bigger than your normal golfing lakes that just kind of take up like one side of one fairway, right? This is like legit put a yacht on it lake, right? And the 6th fairway goes around the lake. So you've got the tee box on one side of the lake, and almost on the exact opposite side of the lake is the green.
But you can't drive over it.
Well, or can you? So Bryson DeChambeau walks up in his practice round and gives it goes and hit like 4 in the water and got one over.
Whoa.
Okay. Yesterday, wind wasn't right. It was in his face. So he walks up today. Keep in mind, this is a par 5, 530-yard hole. But as the crow flies, it's about 360 to the pin.
Okay.
And you got to carry it 340 over the water. All right. He walks up today, and I'm like, oh, this is theater, man. And he's talking to his caddy, and he's like, man, I thought the wind was blowing right. Man, I don't know. And he gets up to the tee box, steps back again, and you just know he's going to chicken out because he keeps talking about the wind. He's like, yeah, it's just not as much wind as I thought. And he goes up, and he hits a bomb, you know, to the end of the fairway and plays. Ends up getting a 5 on the hole, which makes me even more excited for tomorrow. Because he got a 5 on the hole, which may make him a little more apt to just say,
do it.
The hell with it.
Do it.
So sometime over this weekend, tomorrow or Sunday, particularly Sunday, if he has a bad day tomorrow and he's like out of it on Sunday, that's when I think he may have an opportunity to do it. So keep an eye on the 6th hole. Bryson DeChambeau, he's near the top, so he probably will be playing that hole. It'll be early because East Coast, probably around, check the tee times, but it'll probably be at 9:30, 10-ish our time, probably when he rolls through there. And the good news here, as I mentioned before, here at KJR, we have the ability to take a look into the future and give you the audio of what it is going to sound like on Saturday or Sunday when Bryson DeChambeau actually attempts to clear the water at Bay Hill and reach the par 5, 530-yard 6th hole in 1.
Give me another ball.
Just take your drop.
Dropping five, hitting six.
What the hell's he going to do?
Why would he hit it from here?
What he had to do is walk up there and take a drop and make a five, for crying out loud. That's insane. Somebody tackle him.
Give me another ball.
Dropping seven, hitting his eighth shot. Look at Sims behind. We're going to have a camera on Sims. He can't watch.
Somebody tell this clown he doesn't have to hit it from there.
John Daly took an 18 on this hole.
Oh, no.
One time. Because he was just, what the hell,
just
right?
Keep trying it.
And I want, Bryson might just be that type of Roy McAvoy tin cup, especially if he's out of the tournament.
Yeah.
To hell with it. I'm going to do it until I get it over. And you know what? It would be awesome, and I would have more respect for Bryson DeChambeau if he was, because he, you know, every time he's going in the water, he's probably losing 30 or 40 grand, mm-hmm. all right, every time he goes into the water. And so if he just says the hell with it and he sacrifices $150,000 but eventually gets it over, he'd be a hero.
So you said on the practice shots he made, what, one of four?
I think he made one of five.
One of five? Well, then you only got to lose 120, and you immortalize as a legend.
Exactly.
When he hits it.
Oh, it'd be beautiful. So take a look at that this weekend. Keep an eye on Bryson DeChambeau. 514 on Sports Radio 950 KJR. I'm going to give you in the next segment, Jackson, a Russell Wilson trade that I think is A, plausible, and B, I'd really have to consider. Coming up next on 950 KJR.
All in one app.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Huskies and the Kraken. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
523 on 950 KJR. Our friend Tony Castricone, the voice of the Dogs. Going to talk a little Pac-12 tournament, Husky basketball, Husky football schedule that just came out. We haven't chatted with him about that. His weekly segment at 6 o'clock right here on 950 KJR, but I want to spend a little bit of time, and we had Greg Bell on earlier in the show, and for the record, while I'm not completely on Greg Bell Island, which is nothing to see here in the Russell Wilson situation, I am on a canoe about a couple hundred yards off the island. I mean, I'm not in a cruise ship 50 miles away. I'm near the beach on Nothing to See Here Island that Greg Bell is on. So I understand. I think there are two separate arguments. There's the argument of, is Russell going to get traded? That issue, which I think it's pretty much nothing to see here. Where, and then the other issue being, is Russell disgruntled and will it negatively affect his play / his willingness to re-sign in Seattle and be a lifetime Seahawk, which I think is very much an issue. So I kind of split it into two segments. But everybody in the world seems to want to make these Russell Wilson trades because it's fun to do,
it's
right?
Very, very fun.
In March. Well, since we do know that there are only four teams at this point that Russell Wilson wants to be traded to if he were to be traded, Raiders, Saints, Bears and Cowboys, you got to kind of look at each one of those scenarios. And I really only see one of the four that potentially could make some sense for the Seahawks. It doesn't make any sense to trade Russell Wilson for a package that includes Dak Prescott when Dak Prescott wants the same amount of money as Russell Wilson.
Right.
So that just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, and what else on Dallas? I mean, you're going to go package that includes CeeDee Lamb or something like that and a couple of draft picks and they just get rid of Dak. Well, you can't do that because they've got to make the decision on Dak before the $39 million cap hit by trading Russell expires.
Right.
So the timing just doesn't work, in my opinion, for Dallas. So I'm going to scratch Dallas off. The Saints are a financial mess.
It's a disaster there.
I just can't find anything that fits with the Saints. Nothing. Plus their draft picks aren't going to be any good for you either, because they're still going to be good enough where they're going to win at least 9 games, and you're going to be stuck with the 20th draft pick, and you don't want that. That leaves you the Bears and the Raiders. Well, The Bears, you really would be just, you wouldn't be getting a quarterback in return. You'd just be getting draft picks in return. Because the Bears don't have a quarterback that you want.
Right. Foles and Trubisky.
Right. So it's, you'd just be getting three firsts.
Yep.
And you would be saying, we are rebuilding. And we're blowing it up and we're starting over. I don't want to rebuild, and I don't think Pete Carroll wants to rebuild.
And by the way, those firsts, including this year, they're not at the top of the first round. Those are mid to late
right.
first round picks.
Right. And that leaves their haters. John Gruden might be a guy that could convince Mike Mayock to do something. I mean, they're pretty much in cahoots. John Gruden doesn't have Pete Carroll power over the Raiders, but John Gruden was signed to a 10-year contract. He has more power than probably every head coach in the league not named Belichick, Carroll, Reed. I mean, name another one. I don't even think Tomlin has more power than John Gruden does as a head coach. So he is up there when it comes to say, and we know that John Gruden faints when he thinks about Russell Wilson. He has ever since he had Russell Wilson on his TV show before
right.
the draft. So we know how much he loves Russell Wilson. So what type of fit is there? Well, it's funny because the Raiders were the team that I threw out about, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. When was this? 2-10. So 3 weeks ago on Twitter, where I said, and this was only after the Dan Patrick interview. This wasn't four teams. Mm-hmm. This wasn't anything else that has come in succession. I would trade Russell Wilson to the Raiders for Karin 2 firsts, Karin 3 firsts, Karin 4 firsts, or hang up the phone. Now, 51% said hang up the phone. You're not getting Karin 4 firsts.
No, that's unrealistic.
That's unrealistic. So that leaves you with the last two. At that point, only 24% said they would do it for that. But I heard something interesting on Coward's show today, and I was kind of thinking about this as well. The Oakland Raiders have a tight end named Darren Waller, who is on a very, very friendly contract. He was signed before last season. He is set to make $6 million this year, $6 million next year, and $6 million in 2023.
Jeez.
And he is clear and away the third best tight end in football behind Travis Kelce and George Kittle. And at this point in his career and Kittle's career, he may have a better year than Kittle next year because yep. Kittle continues to get injured. So you're talking about maybe the second best tight end in football locked up through 2023.
At a good price.
Okay. They have a running back named Josh Jacobs, who was a first-round draft pick and has only played two seasons, which means he makes 1.5 this year, 2.1 next year, and you have a fifth-year option on him. They have a quarterback in Derek Carr who makes 19.5 this year and 19.7 next year. But if you're subtracting the 30-plus million you're talking about for Russell Wilson, your quarterback just saved you $15 million. So you're talking about a cap-friendly tight end, a cap-friendly running back, and a quarterback that is, I think, cap-friendly for how good he is.
Okay.
Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think Derek Carr is a top 8 quarterback in the NFL, but I think he's definitely a top 15, and you could probably tilt your head and argue he's a top 15. I'll say top 15 quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion. I don't think he's great, and you hear Mike Mayock talking about him as he's like as if he's a Pro Bowler, which I think is very interesting. Why do you think Mike Mayock right now, with this Russell Wilson rumor, is coming out in public and saying how much they love Derek Carr?
Because they want to package Carr into a trade package.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So that the combination of Carr and either Waller or Jacobs and two first-round draft picks. Now, if you're the Raiders, you've just gone, okay, you lose Waller or you lose Jacobs and you lose a couple of first-round draft picks, but you have Russell Wilson. And you have Russell Wilson under contract, and John Gruden is just arrogant enough to think, I don't need any of these other things. I have Russell Wilson. I will go win a Super Bowl with Russell Wilson. And if you're the Seahawks, Your offense has the second or third best tight end in football to go along to that already your quarterback knows, and DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, and you've recouped the first-round draft picks that you lost in the Jamal Adams trade, and you have all sorts of free agent room to re-sign Jamal Adams and to have flexibility this year and next year in free agency. So, once again, I am not saying the Seahawks should trade Russell Wilson or I want Russell Wilson to be traded. What I am saying is this is the only team I think that actually makes some sense if you were to do it after June 1st, which would make it even more intriguing for the Raiders because you're not talking about 2021 first-round pick anymore. You're talking about 2022 and 2023 first-round draft picks. So, tell me I'm ridiculous. Tell me I'm stupid. Go ahead.
Yes.
The floor is yours.
This is completely ridiculous and completely stupid. Completely. Okay, let's bring it down by each player, right?
Okay.
Derek Carr, I think you're dead on there. And there is absolutely truth because you got to think in the strategy of the way that GMs talk about players to build them up, to try to make them sound better, whatever.
Right.
I think that they want Derek Carr out of there. I mean, look what Marcus Mariota did when he had to come in and slide in because of Carr's injuries. Mm-hmm. Things worked out pretty darn well. Mariota actually looked pretty good. He had a late pick in a San Diego game that cost him. But overall, he was a fine replacement. So they can get by without paying Derek Carr. So with that said, where do you want to go, Raiders? Are you willing to bring in a Russell Wilson for a Carr and then plus what? Josh Jacobs is completely out of the question. That is the ridiculous part of it because they invested a first-round pick. He's on such a team-friendly contract. That is a
I'd almost rather have Waller anyway if I had the choice.
I would too, and that is where Darren Waller comes in. And you know, if you're saying, hey, if you want Russell Wilson, you got to give up this tight end. That's an amazing contract. The part where we're probably divided is how many picks go with that, right? If you're going Derek Carr, which is, by the way, we're taking Carr off of your hands, Raiders, because
yes.
Seattle, I mean, depending on what happens in the draft and depending on you know who you bring in and what kind of quarterback you have kind of ready to take over when Carr's probably done in 2 years with you, you could even cut Carr earlier and save some money there. So
that's true.
We're taking him off your hands, Raiders. So that's a service to them. So Waller's in, and then it's probably only because Waller's on such a good contract.
You think it's only one first?
I think it's probably only one first.
Well, maybe it's a first and a second.
So and maybe it is. So I think the package there is Russell Wilson for Derek Carr, Darren Waller, a first plus mid third round pick. That package is super intriguing. I probably don't do it. I'd probably hang up the phone. But you're absolutely right with what you teased earlier. It is one that you have to think about because you know how much John Schneider and Pete Carroll want that tight end. They went and got Jimmy Graham. They went and they love
Darren Waller is the Jimmy Graham that we wanted to have here in
Seattle.
Yes,
he can actually block.
He's a freaking monster.
He's unbelievable. If you watch Darren Waller, if you watch Raider
games, you're a fantasy guy, you know how good Darren Waller is. If you're just a casual fan and you've seen the Raiders once, you don't know.
So Darren Waller is the key piece there. And because he is worth a first-round pick, I mean, we go back to the original poll, right? The original poll was Carr plus one first, two first, three for right, whatever it was.
He is a first-round quality player.
Darren Waller is a first-round player, absolutely. So at that point, it's Carr, first-rounder in Darren Waller, and then plus a first. And because I'm greedy, I would want a mid-round pick.
Okay.
I think that is something that you have to at least think about and probably, for me, at least say no to. But it's a very, very intriguing trade.
I think both sides have a couple of cocktails and a steak dinner discussing that.
Yes, yes.
I really do. I think Mike Mayock and John Gruden on one side, Pete Carroll and John Schneider on the other side, have a nice, socially distant, because they're both on the West Coast, a socially distant at a outdoor patio with heating lamps.
In Vegas, of course.
In Vegas, of course. Discussion on a deal like that. And another thing, you look at Derek Carr's stats. Tell me if Pete Carroll would drool over these completion percentage numbers.
Oh, boy.
Last 3 years, 69, 70, 67.
That's nice.
He doesn't take big shots. He doesn't take chances. He completes passes. He moves the chains.
He does throw a lot of picks, though, does he
He's,
not?
He not really. 10, 8, and 9 the last 3 years.
To how many touchdowns?
19, 21, 27.
Okay.
So in the last 3 years, he has thrown... And he had a 28-6 year too in 2016.
So actually now that you say that, it's probably more like Carr, Waller, and just a first. That's it. End of story. It's probably those three things, and that's,
you know, else
probably
going
to be it.
He takes as many sacks in 2 years as Russell does in one.
Thanks, offensive line.
He took 26 sacks last year. Russ took like 50.
Isn't
right?
Tom Capel also the offensive line coach there?
Yes, which
that's
would be
kind
awesome.
Of interesting.
Which would be awesome. And I would really like them to take the Seahawks to get Gabe Jackson, who they just dropped on as an offensive lineman, just to say, hey, you know, and Russ, hey, by the way, we're going to upgrade the offensive line for Carr too. Just and take him off the Raiders' hands for you. Passer rating last 3 years, 94, 101, 101.
Okay.
For Derek Carr. So, I'm just saying.
It's a Carroll type of
animal. I'm just saying. It is a conversation that I think both the Seahawks and the Raiders would at the very least have to have a couple of cocktails and a steak dinner discussing.
All right, I like it.
All right. 5:37 on Sports Radio 950 KJR. Tony Castricone coming up at the top of the hour. But first, it's time for Stats or for Losers in our next segment on Sports Radio 950.
For you.
It's time for
Stats or for Losers.
Stats for Losers.
Speaking of losers.
Stats for Losers.
Take it away, Softy and Dick.
Only one loser in the studio today, not two like usual. The other loser will be back on Monday, though, at 3 o'clock. Early returns on the poll there, Jackson Feltz.
I want to see this poll.
Here's the poll if you want to vote on at Dick Fain. No, I don't think Russell Wilson's going anywhere, but what do you think of our afternoon show trade? I think the Raiders are the only team of the four that makes any sense. So here it is. Derek Carr, Darren Waller, first in 2022, second in 2023.
Now, why did you push the years really quickly on this?
Instead of one and two?
Yeah.
Did you?
Because the thought there is, are you saying that the trade's going to happen after this year, like in like June when the cap hit
yes.
is a lot less?
Yes.
Okay.
After this year's draft.
That's
yes.
very important
yes,
to
yes,
note.
Yes, absolutely. Because I don't think they're going to trade him with the $39 million
right.
cap hit. Only 8% like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
37% say I could be convinced.
That's where I voted.
Ooh, now it's up to 38. It's just refreshed. So now it's 44% of the people that could either be convinced or like it a lot. 34% says I'll pass, and 22% say hell no, we won't go. So interesting. We'll see how it goes over the next 23 hours and 55 minutes. All right, Jackson. Well, since you didn't get to do much the last time we did this together, why don't you go first on Stats or for Losers?
Okay, and I am the biggest loser here, so I will go first. I have to start with a Sounders stat, a Freddie Montero stat, because the Sounders brought back a Freddie Montero yesterday. Montero, of course, played here in Seattle from 2019 to 2012, most recently, of course, with Vancouver as well. But when he was here, Dick, Freddie Montero recorded 47 goals and 34 assists, both of which are currently tied for first in club history with Clint Dempsey and Marl Rosales, respectively. So just with one more goal and with one more assist, he will sit alone in first place in both categories in regular season Sounders history. So we're talking about statistically the greatest of all time in a Rave Green returning.
And so you're talking about game two or three of the season we'll have that
done.
Boy,
I sure hope so.
What year did he leave?
He left in 2012. That was his last year. And then
that is amazing.
Yeah.
9 years ago?
Yeah, and he's been bouncing around a number of different places and Vancouver
man.
Three of the last 4 years.
If you would have asked me, I'd have been 3 or 4 years. It's been nine years. Unbelievable. All right, I got a stat for you. Where's my Chris Peters?
I did not have the drop ready because Softy always plays the drop.
Yes, I don't do the board. I do one thing at a time. Softy's a magician on the board.
He is.
We need a little Chris Peters.
I'll let you know when I get him.
All right. Zion Williamson has scored at least 20 points on 50% or better shooting, and he has done it 14 games in a row. If he does it one more game in a row, he will break Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's all-time record for the longest streak ever in a player's first or second season. And Zion this weekend is going to be the fourth youngest player to ever play in an All-Star game. So he's got the record he's going to break of Kareem. And he's the fourth youngest to Kobe, LeBron, and Magic to play in an All-Star game. Jeez. That is what kind of talent we are talking about with Zion Williams.
Stats are for losers.
There's Chris.
There you go. That is a hell of a stat. Dick, this afternoon, you mentioned it earlier in the update, the Seattle Mariners pulled off the remarkable 5-2-3-2 triple play.
They did.
Which I don't know if I've ever seen that kind of a triple play before, but it was against the White Sox in the fourth inning. You know, it got me wondering, how rare are triple plays for our Seattle Mariners? You know, sure, this is only spring training, but in the 44 seasons that the Mariners have played, they've only turned 12 triple plays in M's history, and they didn't record a single triple play between 1995 and 2010. So savor them when they come.
So wait a second. The best era of baseball in Mariner history, they recorded no triple plays, but every time they're crappy, they record all the triple plays.
They actually recorded a triple play in the first month of the Mariners' existence,
really?
April 1977.
Wow. Okay, I like
stats
it.
Stats are for losers.
Hey, that's Chris Peterson. I've got a Chris Peterson stat. Status for losers. During the Chris Peterson era, the Washington Huskies did not sign a single top 50 recruit in America. Now, that's just part of the stat. That's the bad part of the stat. Here's the good part of the stat. Yet they had 12 players drafted in the top 50 of the NFL draft. So Chris Peterson, as he did at Boise, takes three-star players and turns them into first and second round draft picks. Pretty impressive.
Stats are for losers.
That is very impressive. Thank you, Chris Peterson. Dick, I want to do a draft pick stat here of sorts.
Okay.
This morning, the Cincinnati Bengals released offensive lineman B.J. Finney, who played exactly zero snaps in the regular season for the Seahawks before being traded in October. With that 2020 offseason signing now kind of being moot because he is back as a free agent, John Schneider can now be credited with the following trade, Dick. Former tight end Nick Vannett, who was taking the third round of the 2016 draft, he got these players out of Nick Vannett: Carlos Dunlap and Quandre Diggs. Here's how. Because Seattle sent a fifth-round pick to Detroit. When Schneider sent Vannett to the Steelers in 2019, he received a fifth-round pick. Okay. Seattle sent that fifth-round pick to Detroit for Quandre Diggs and a seventh-round pick. The Hawks then sent that seventh-round pick and me, Jay Finney, who's now a free agent again, to Cincinnati for Dunlap. So Vannett for Diggs and Dunlap and... To top it all off, Seattle could still, because Russell Wilson wants his offensive line help, bring back B.J. Finney in theory. John Schneider is a mastermind.
Stats are for losers.
He takes so much heat for his first-round draft pick failures, and yet not nearly enough credit for exactly what you're talking about there.
Epic.
In those type of deals. Tony Castricone after top of the hour headlines coming up next on Sports Radio 950.
Now from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines, 6 o'clock, brought to you by VenueKings.com. The Mariners tie again. Was it 8-8 and then 9-9 and now 2-2? Third straight tie, bringing their Cactus League record to a 1-1-3. The Mariners, as we mentioned on Stats Are For Losers, did turn a 5-2-3-2 triple play in the game to escape a bases-loaded no-out jam. Here's another stat for losers for you, Jackson. The last 5-2-3-2 triple play in the regular season was turned by the Chicago Cubs in 1955.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't happen very often. Three-time All-Pro center Jason Kelce has announced that he has restructured his contract. Instead of retiring, he will return for another year in Philadelphia. Lions are going to restructure the contract of linebacker Jamie Collins. The Washington football team has released quarterback Alex Smith, freeing up $14.7 million in cap space. Creighton's men's basketball coach Greg McDermott has been suspended from all team activities after his racist plantation remarks following last week's loss to Xavier. All right, time to talk some Husky. There's the music. Trying to talk some Husky basketball with the voice of the Dogs. Tony Castricone joins us here on Sports Radio 950 KJR on a Friday night. How you doing, Tony?
I'm good, Dick. Happy Husky week off as we are ready for the Pac-12 tournament.
Yes, indeed. You got a little time off after what was a busy run against the Arizona schools. And, you know, we'll take some positives from that because a heck of a response by this team showing some pride in the ASU second game and the Arizona game after that. I mean, I don't know any other way to put it than embarrassing first game against Arizona State.
Well, that first game against Arizona State, you know, Coach Hopp obviously not happy with how that went. No one's happy with how that went. It was embarrassing the way that it unraveled. But at the same time, you know, I don't know how entirely unexpected it was that the Huskies might play a game like that down the stretch, given the fact that they were, due to circumstances out of their control, forced to reschedule things in a manner where they had to play 8 games in 17 days. I mean, that's and Coach Hopp kind of joked about it with us in some of the postgame shows about how they're now the Seattle Huskies G League team and, you know, all this stuff. I mean, that's a run there for a college basketball team. And, you know, this isn't the best Huskies team as far as, you know, results all season long. And so I wondered if they might hit a wall at some point. And it looked on Tuesday at Arizona State as if they did. But you mentioned it. They rallied and they played really, really well. And I thought Eric Stevenson was one of the guys that had a really good last couple of games at Arizona State, at Arizona. Look, let's be honest, Dick. All they had to do is execute in the final minute of either of those games, and they go 2-0 in that stretch. And so clearly they're not where they need to be from an execution standpoint in crunch time. But the fact that they're now in those situations on the road against quality teams, I think is a big step.
Well, I was happy to see the 15 assists on 27 made shots in that second Arizona State game. I mean, you're getting over 50% of your field goals assisted. That is a big step for this team because they were at 43% coming into that game. You mentioned the tail end of those games. Let's talk about the end of that Arizona game, because what did Hopp, if anything, tell you after that game as far as what they were trying to do defensively there? Because it looked to me like Jamal Bey just kind of left his man, focused on, committed too far to the help, and just let his man leak to the corner. Or was he supposed to bump Stevenson over there to the corner, and was he doing what he's supposed to be doing?
Yeah, we didn't get too much into that with Hopp from a game plan standpoint, but I know this. Akinjo was killing him. I mean, he scored 26 points. They had to make sure that they had Akinjo on lockdown. You didn't want to let him beat you. And there were a couple of plays late in the game. You know, it obviously everybody remembers that last shot by Julius Tabellis, and he hit a huge shot. But there were a couple of plays late that could be scrutinized that, like, you know, it never just comes down to one play. And I think Tabellis did a really great job, and they drew up a great play of, like, all the eyes are going to be on Akinjo, and then he kind of floated back there to the corner and was left wide open, and a great job by Akinjo finding the open man. But there's other things there. You got a great free throw shooter in Eric Stevenson who makes one of two down the stretch. You got Quade Green with the charge. You got Akinjo hits a three that I thought might have been a two. You've got, you know, all these things that happen late in any given close game that's decided by a point. And it's disappointing. But, you know, again, I think this is such a learning season for these Dogs. I mean, they have a lot of talent. They're young. A lot of these guys are going to be back next year. And, you know, sometimes you learn lessons in the heat of the moment the hard way, and that was just a defensive breakdown. But I think one of the things I'm most inspired by, Dick, is just the way that this defense has progressed throughout the course of the year. Certainly, you can be unhappy with that final possession at Arizona. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the defense in February compared to December and January, I think that by far is the biggest improvement that this team has made all season long, and I think that's really good to see.
Well, and they've changed up that defense. Tony Cascone, voice of the Dogs here on 950 KJR. I mean, for most of Hop's time here, we've seen that, you know, I call it the umbrella zone defense with one guy in the low post and everybody else out there on the perimeter, and we've seen a lot more man, but it's been kind of a weird man to try to diagnose. I mean, sometimes I see a doubling of the ball. I see a lot of switching on screens. Sometimes guys are left open. So, like, what is the game plan that he's trying to implement with his man-to-man, knowing that, hey, you don't have a lot of practice time this year as opposed to most years?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's going to vary from night to night based on the opponent and the different things that the opponent presents. And I mean, I think, like, look, there are some teams in the Pac-12 that really make things difficult from a size standpoint. Like when you consider the length at every position that like an SC or a Stanford has, that's very different compared to like what an Arizona State has when the three guards that they start are 6 foot, 6'1", and 6'2". And so, you know, just the different kind of the makeup of the different teams that you face is certainly going to tweak things. Who's going to be the leading scorer? Who's the most dangerous guy? Do they have a sharpshooter from the outside or do they not? You know, are you more comfortable, letting somebody, try to get a look from deep or not?
Right.
They just tried to make different tweaks every single night. And so honestly, calling the play-by-play, like it's hard for me to pick up on the nuance
yeah.
tweaks that they're making from game to game. But I do think this, Hop does not want to come out of the zone. Like there's no doubt like mm-hmm. that's what he wants to run. And over the vast majority of his time on Montlake, he's going to be a zone defense coach. They were changing things in order to try to fit their personnel this year. And I think they found something that's certainly working much better than what they had early in the season. And they're going to stick with that for the Pac-12 tournament as long as they can. Now, this thing comes down to matchups, Dick. And that's why I'm really, curious to see, how this thing plays out. Because I think there are teams that the Huskies have a good chance of beating in Vegas. But I think there are other teams that they don't, And I would hate to see them run into a Stanford or an FC. But, I like the Utah, Washington State, even another chance at Arizona State sort of matchup.
Yep. UCLA. So, I like a UCLA matchup.
Exactly. And also, I'd be curious to see how they do against Oregon State. I mean, Oregon State is a solid team, but the one time we played them this year was back when the defense was struggling and they gave up 91 points. And I just think they're a different team now. So there's a lot of teams I could see them having success against this next week.
So are we locked into the 7-10 game? Is that the...
Yeah.
Okay, so you're locked into the 7-10 game. It's just a matter of who you're going to play. Do you know who the options are? Who potentially could we play in that first game?
I don't have it in front of me right now. I know early in the week, it was looking to me like it was going to be Washington State or Utah.
Okay.
I know Arizona State's a possibility. But, given the results of, the last day or so, I don't have the update.
Yep. So we'll know, by Sunday, we'll know who we're playing on Wednesday then.
Absolutely.
Very good. Final couple minutes here with Tony Castricone. Got to ask you about the football schedule that just came out. I mean, to me, it looks pretty friendly, man. I'm trying to find, a lot of games. I asked John Wilner this week. I said, John, I mean, how many games are the Dogs going to be underdogs in? And he said, I think they're locked to be favorites in 10 of 12. And he said the other two are going to be within a field goal. So it looks like a pretty good schedule. We knew who we were going to play, but I just think how it laid out was pretty favorable for Washington.
Exactly, Dick. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's no surprises here as to who and where we're playing, but the layout is key. And here's what I think. Like, there's so much to the rhythm of the season and the momentum that can be gained or lost at any given point. And I like the fact that certainly week two is going to be tough against Michigan. We knew that was going to be there. But if you can get the cow monkey off your back in the first week of Pac-12, go to Oregon State, you like your chances there, and then at home against UCLA, at Arizona, you're getting halfway through this thing with some momentum.
Yes, you are.
Now, the back half is tough, but if you go into the back half seeing the finish line, like we're getting close here and we're highly ranked and we're confident and we've got this momentum, as tough as that back half is, going at Stanford, home Oregon, home Arizona State, back-to-back-to-back weeks, I like – going into those situations highly ranked, a lot on the line, there's juice with the fan base when you're at home, hopefully we've got at least several thousand in there rocking. I like the way this lays out a lot. I think the back half is the tougher half, but that being said, I think that sets you up for some exciting late season games, which is what everybody wants.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Hopefully this week will be fun too, with you and Jason on the call. Let's see if they can pull off a win or two in this tournament, make things, you know, feel a little bit better going into next basketball season. Tony, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you next week, man. Thanks.
Thank you, Dick. Appreciate it.
That's the voice of the Dogs. Tony Castricone joins us every Friday at 6 o'clock talking Dogs hoops and a little bit of Dogs football when the opportunity presents itself. We've got the opportunity next to talk to one of our good friends from the Tacoma News Tribune, Greg Bell. What's the latest on the Russell Wilson situation? What free agents does Greg think Seattle will be going after? And what current Seattle free agents does he think are going to re-sign with the team or possibly restructure deals? We'll talk about it all with Greg Bell, TNT, coming up next on 950K.